Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. In 2019, Rachel Richards quit her job and retired with over $15,000 a month in passive income. She's the best-selling author of Money Honey and Passive Income Aggressive Retirement. And in this special summer reboot episode, she is sharing the power of building passive income right now.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Compton Game, where we flip the script on the old school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
Now let's get to today's podcast. Rachel will inspire you. At 27 years old, she's a former financial advisor. She's really made a name for herself in personal finance because in 2019, she quit her job, retired with over $10,000 a month in passive income. She's also the best-selling author of Money Honey and Passive Income Aggressive Retirement. And she's going to share what you need to know to start building passive income right now. Yes, even in isolation, quarantine, whatever you want to call it, use this time to get new skills and start building passive income.
There is so much that I want to talk to you about. When I was writing out questions, I was like, okay, I have to stop the questions. Otherwise, this will be too long of an interview. But I wanted to start out and ask you probably like the big high level question, but how did you become a real estate investor with 35 rental units at 27? Like, that is seriously impressive. So you've got to give us some of the details. Like, how did you get there?
Yeah, for sure. And it's crazy too, because my husband and I really only started investing in real estate in 2017.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we have 35 units, not property. So that's something that people sometimes get mixed up. So really 35 doors, and we have 5 properties. So like a couple of our properties are 11 or 12 unit apartment type buildings.
Right.
But in 2017, you know, real estate investing was something I had always wanted to do, because in my opinion, it's one of the best tools for building long-term wealth.
Yes.
So we started looking for our first rental in 2018. And just to back up a little bit more, like the way that we came up with the money in the first place is just because we basically didn't have any debt and we were really good at saving. So I paid my way through school, through college, by selling Cutco knives. Have you heard
yes.
of Cutco?
Yes. I think my family bought some of those.
Oh my gosh, too funny. So they're the best. And so I paid my way through school by selling knives. And then my husband, Andrew, had military benefits because he's a veteran. So he went back to college and used his benefits to pay for school. So we didn't graduate with any debt. And not only that, but we were both like pretty frugal and pretty responsible with our money starting out. So we were saving, you know, good chunks of money every paycheck. So by the time I was 24... and he was 29, we had a pretty good chunk of money saved. So that's where the initial money came for the down payment. In 2016, we started looking. And then in 2017, we found our first duplex that we bought. And we're in Louisville, Kentucky. So this is a very low cost of living area. You know, the housing market is low cost. So it's a great place to invest. And I preface, you know, what I'm about to say, because I know my Bay Area people would just scoff at me if heard right. the price of our first rental. But our duplex cost us $100,000.
Wow.
So we put 20 grand down in order to buy it. And you know, you just can't buy houses for that cheap in some other parts of the country, but that's how we've been able to do it here. And once we bought that first duplex, like, that's the best investment we'll really have ever bought. That's what I tell my husband. We were making $500 in cash flow right off the bat. And now when it's fully rented, we're making closer to $800 or $900 per month. That's in pure profit. And our ROI on that, like our cash on cash return, has been close to 20%. So once we bought that first property, then we were just saving all that extra money that we were making. So you start to build up momentum quickly. And then we had enough money to buy the next property. And then we had all that additional income. So it's kind of like a snowball effect. We bought 5 properties in a span of 2 years, and we own, so that's over 35 units total that we own now.
Wow. I mean, that is just, it sounds so easy. I know that it's not always that easy, but, you know, I think everyone wants to invest in real estate. I hear that like time and time again. I teach at a university here in California, and the students are always like, yeah, I want to buy real estate. I want to buy real estate. I'm like, okay, but we have to actually like do some research and understand, because I think most people think, well, you just buy like a single family home or a condo and suddenly you're a real estate millionaire, which it just doesn't always work out that way. Can you walk us through a little bit about like the process you went through of finding that first property? Like, what sort of research did you do? Like, were you fearful at all? Like, what was that process like for you?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'll definitely share some of the things that I was looking for. You know, it was scary buying the first property because this is the first real investment you're making. You're putting so much money into it and you don't know for sure. You know, you don't have any past success to back yourself up. So it's scary. but now though, like there's no emotion in it. I know when a property is a good deal or when it's not. So I can make a very, you know, non-emotional, logical decision and I know it's going to work out. But the first one's always scary. So there's a couple of things that my husband and I were looking for in a rental property. And the first thing is location. You know, you really have to define whether you're investing in your city or you're investing out of state. What specific area do you want to invest in? Because you can invest in areas that maybe aren't as nice, but you'd make more money, or you can invest in areas that are nicer, but maybe it's more competitive, so it's hard to make money. So that's where we narrowed it down first. And then we had basically two primary requirements in terms of the financials. So because when we were investing in real estate, I wanted to have a certain return on investment. And when I say that, I mean cash on cash ROI, because I knew I could make 8 or 10% in the stock market. I mean, that's what the stock market does over the long run. So I didn't want to invest in a rental to make 8 or 10% because then what's the point? You know, I could just put it in the stock market. So I was like, okay, well, I want to at least get a 12% ROI. And that feels like it's more worth it to me because that's a much higher return. So that's what we were looking for. And then the other thing we wanted was and at this point we were kind of looking at single family homes. So I was thinking I wanted to have at least $200 or $300 in cash flow per month from that single family rental. And you know, maybe for a duplex, maybe I would want $300 or $400 per month for the total duplex. So those are my initial requirements. And once you really figure out what you want those to be for yourself, then it makes the process very easy. You can take the emotion out of it. You just run the numbers until you find something that meets your requirements. And then, you know, you do some more research and make sure it's really meeting the requirements, and then you buy it, which, you know, sounds easier said than done. So I don't want to underestimate how easy this is, because one thing I've seen real estate investors do is they become discouraged because they're looking for weeks and weeks and months and they haven't found anything. And it is so easy to get discouraged and to think, man, I'm never going to find anything. But truly in real estate investing, patience pays off. It took us 9 solid months to find that first duplex.
Wow.
And I'm so glad we waited, because we found that duplex. It was perfect. It was everything we wanted. So all the other properties we went and saw and all the other offers we made that didn't work out, like that all happened for a reason, because this first duplex was the absolute best rental property we'll have ever bought.
And when you talk about location, of course, we all know that like location, 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 saying with real estate. But like when you're looking at location, are there certain things you're looking for or like certain things you're trying to avoid?
Yeah. And this is more personalized.
Yeah.
Like some things, like I don't want to be in a really high crime rate area. Like I don't want to feel unsafe when I'm going to my rental property. There's so many investors that I know in Louisville who actually prefer those areas because they're making a lot more. You know, the houses are cheaper in those areas, so their ROI is a lot higher. And that's great, you know, because that works for some people. That's just not what I wanted. And, you know, another thing that I look for is what are the up and coming areas right now? And what are the areas that maybe were up and coming a few years ago, but now are completely oversaturated? Because those ones I'll stay away from, because normally the prices will be too high to even get into those markets anymore. So it's easiest to do this in the city that you live in, because you obviously are familiar with your city. But it's also not impossible to invest out of state. I mean, I know many people who have done it. And it's just a matter of maybe doing a little more due diligence and research and asking people in that city for their opinion. But you can definitely find those areas where they're just becoming popular. People are really moving in there. And that's typically a great place to pick up a rental property.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I actually have a lot of friends who, I live in Los Angeles, obviously very expensive. Even to purchase something that is quote unquote lower priced, you still need a hefty chunk of cash to get in at a, you know, 5 or 10% or 20% down. And so I have a lot of friends who have purchased out of state in areas where, like Louisville, it's a lower cost of entry, and they've had great success. And, you know, there was that fear of not being able to see their investment every day, not being able to drive by it. But they have had success with that. So like, what do you say to people who live maybe in some of these areas where real estate is really high priced and it might be tough to even get started?
Yeah, I love like talking about this. So thank you for asking, because I think it's so important to know that no matter where you live, you can still do this. And if you live in LA or San Diego or some of these places in California, it might be impossible to find the rental property that will work for you just because of financial constraints. I mean, I certainly wouldn't be able to go out there and buy $1 million property and put 20% down. You know, not everyone has 200 grand sitting around to
right.
invest. And, you know, that's what a lot of those properties can be, anywhere from 500 to a million or up. But I have heard so many people from that area or from different parts of the country that have just decided, I'm going to buy a property in a completely different state. You know, even states that are, you can't even drive to, that would be too long of a drive. You would have to fly to. So one of my good friends who lives in Arizona, like an expensive part of Arizona, she grew up, I think it was Missouri where she grew up. So she was familiar with this city in Missouri, and she decided, okay, I don't live there anymore, but you know, if I'm going to invest anywhere else in the country, at least I know this city somewhat. So she invested there. She bought this rental. She just turned it into an Airbnb. I mean, this is like her first month renting it out as an Airbnb.
Wow.
And her ROI is already like 20 or 25%.
Wow.
I mean, something absolutely crazy. Yeah. So it absolutely can be done. I mean, I know it feels scary, but you can still do your due diligence. You can still do all the things that you would do even if you were in the same city as that by having other people do it for you. So I definitely encourage you to do that. Another example is a friend that I have that used to live in Hawaii, and then she moved back to the U.S., like the continental U.S., and she decided, I'm going to keep my rental property, the property that I lived in Hawaii, and rent it out. And so that feels scary because that's so, so far away. But she has managed her property in Hawaii. She has a 0% vacancy rate.
Wow.
So she is able to turn it over. Literally, one person moves out and the next person moves in the next day. She's had pictures done. She's had maintenance done, everything she's been able to do from over here. And she's never had to fly back once to manage it. So
that's incredible.
You know, yeah, it is. There's a lot of proof and a lot of success stories out there. And I am actually about to become a long distance landlord myself. So
ooh.
I will be experiencing it too. Yeah, because all of my properties are here in Louisville, Kentucky. Literally in 4 days from now, we are moving to Colorado. So I will be a long distance landlord officially.
Wow, that is exciting. What prompted the move to Colorado?
Well, now that we are financially independent and we can sort of go wherever we want, we've always wanted to move out west, and we're really into hiking and the outdoors. So it's just something my husband and I have always wanted to do, and now we're finally making it happen.
I love that. I love those stories. Yeah. I mean, being financially independent, you talk about being retired in 2019, which I think for so many people is like an envious state to be in, and that you have over $10,000 per month in passive income. And so I'm curious, like, walk me through a little bit of the passive income. I mean, obviously, we've talked a little bit about the real estate piece, but like, what are some of those other buckets to fill up like passive income? Because I think for so many people, that feels like so out of reach.
Yeah. And it's crazy to think about because it felt out of reach too. I mean, I didn't have any passive income just 3 years ago. So this $10,000 per month, we have been able to build up in 3 years. So it's really astounding how far you can come in such a short period
wow.
of time. Yeah. So I have passive income from three sources, but two of the sources make up like 95% of it. And one is the real estate. And on any given month, we're making between $7,000 and $12,000 in profit per month just from the real estate. And then my other big source of passive income is the royalties from my two best-selling books. So Money Honey and Passive Income Aggressive Retirement. I actually just had my first $7,000 month in book sales.
Yes!
So yeah. so that makes up a really big chunk now. So really, I think our passive income these days is closer to $15,000 a month, and we're hoping to get to the $20,000 mark in the next few months.
That is so exciting. Like, I love hearing those stories. So you talked about your book, your new book out, Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement. Before we kind of go through like more in the book, like tell me a little bit about like the strategy behind like launching the book and getting it to actually be a passive income source.
Yeah. And so I, you know, some people have maybe misconceptions about what passive income is. So passive income is money that is earned with little to no ongoing work. Now, here's the catch, though, is that passive income, it does take money or time to create. So there's sort of two stages. In stage one, you're building the passive income stream. So for me, this would be writing the book, marketing the book, launching the book. And then in stage two, once you have your passive income stream going, then it becomes a lot more hands-off. And that's where it really becomes passive, right? Because there's nothing passive about writing a book, right?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Right. So the passive income comes after I've launched it. And now I'm just doing, you know, a couple hours per week of marketing efforts just to maintain my sales. And so that's what's great about it. So in terms of how to do this, there's a source that I recommend. It's a book that I found. It's called Published by Chandler Bolt. And before I had ever written a book, I always felt this desire to write a book. In fact, I think I read recently that something like 82 or 84% of Americans want to write and publish a book.
I believe it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So this is really something that I think is on a lot of people's bucket lists. The problem for me was that I had no clue how to do this. I mean, how does one write and self-publish and launch a book, you know,
and make money?
Yeah. And successful financially. But this book called Published by Chandler Bolt, it really talks you through everything that you need to know to do this, from finding a book idea to outlining to here's how you have a launch group that can help you launch your group or launch your book. And here's how you can continue to market it afterwards successfully. So once I had the tools, then it was easy for me. I sat down, I followed his process, and I launched both of my books very successfully.
The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.
I love that because I have actually been writing my first book, and it sat in my head for a couple of years, and I went back and oscillated between, do I want to find a book publisher? Do I want to go through all of that? Is that even worth it to me to, you know what? I know what I'm doing. I have the tools. Like, why don't I just self-publish it? And I love that there's this movement now of it being possible to launch things out in the world, A, without having a huge publisher or tons of money or whatever it may be, that you can actually put your ideas. Obviously, they have to be good. They have to be executed well, but that there are these avenues to do these things. And your story is proof that it can become a passive income source for you. And I think those stories need to be shared more.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you brought up too the self-publishing versus traditional publishing. Self-publishing is so cool because anyone can do it. And that's why I love passive income, is because it's truly such an attainable source of income, and it's an attainable way to retire early and achieve financial independence. And before I learned about self-publishing, you know, all I really had heard about was traditional publishing. You know, you write a book, you get a book deal with one of the big publishers, and then you publish a book.
And you basically basically make no money in the process.
Exactly.
So unless you're a big author.
Exactly. Because when you publish traditionally, you're making a 15% royalty and you're still expected to do most, if not all, of the promoting and marketing of your book, which to me, once I learned that, I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense because I could self-publish. I'm still going to have to do all the marketing and I could be making anywhere from a 35 to 70% royalty on Amazon, which is an enormous difference.
Yeah, I like those numbers much better.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about, like, in your book, you break down a lot of different, like, passive income strategies, which I love. How do you, if you're someone and you like this idea of passive income, like, how do you vet out the different strategies and, like, figure out what might actually work for you? Like, and then I guess maybe to complement that, like, how do you then decide, like, okay, this is my thing, like, I'm going to go do this thing?
Yeah, for sure. Great question. In my book, I talk about 28 different passive income models. So there are plenty ideas out there. And the point I make is you don't have to try all 28 of these. You don't have to try even 10 or 5. All it takes is one passive income stream to make work, and you can continue to grow and increase that passive income stream. So there's definitely plenty of things that people can do. The first step is really asking yourself, which do you have more of, time or money? Because it will require time or money to build a passive income stream. And the follow-up question is, because my automatic response to that is, hey, I have neither. I don't have time and I don't have money.
Right?
So the follow-up question is, okay, if you don't have either one, which one will be easier to create? Will it be easier for you to create additional time, to free up time, or to free up or create additional money? Because there's no get rich quick scheme here. This isn't something that you snap your fingers and you have this money tree that's making money. So it does take work. So that's what I would recommend, just kind of thinking about that in the beginning, because that way you can sort of narrow things down. Like if you have a lot of money, maybe you want to do something where you can generate portfolio income and generate income from dividends from stocks. You know, that's something that requires a lot of money to make a significant income. Or depending on how you do it, you could look at rental properties. Sometimes that requires a decent chunk of money to invest in a rental property. On the other hand, though, if you have more time, maybe you would consider doing something to create royalty income. So writing a book, writing and launching an online course. You know, if you're a musician, this is what musicians do. They write songs and they generate royalties from their music. So the royalty income category is really broad. And I think it's more attainable because it requires more of a time investment than a money investment.
Exactly. Yeah. And so in your book, like walking through these 28 different examples, if you're the like average person, you're getting into passive income, how many like revenue streams do you think is there like a crystal ball sort of number of like, oh, if you have 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 different passive income streams, or is it just really opening your brain up to the idea that all of these are possible, maybe not something that you want to do all of these 28, but you could certainly try your hand at a bunch of these.
Yeah. So there's no clear-cut number, but I think that the best strategy is narrow it down to the number one passive income model that sounds the easiest to create or that you're the most excited about. And try with that first. And maybe you'll find, okay, this isn't as generating as much money as you hoped it would, or maybe you're not as passionate about this as you wanted to be. And then maybe you can try another one and add it to that. So you could be somebody that tries a lot of these different passive income streams and you have, you know, 10 passive income streams that are each generating $500 a month. You know, that's a great way to do it. Or you could do something the way that I'm doing it. I have two main ones, but some people just have one. Like there's a lot of people who are completely retired because of their real estate investments. And so some people just want to focus on one thing, hit it out of the park with that, continue to grow that passive income stream until it's big enough, and then they're done. And really the secret is, you know, the epiphany that I had is a few years ago is that once your passive income exceeds your living expenses, that's when you're retired. So that's what you want to aim for. But for me personally, and what I would recommend is don't just aim for that. Aim for more than that. because you want to have buffer room. You want to, if you're me, you want to still be able to save money each month, because that just makes me feel more comfortable and really feel like I have that financial security. So that's why we aimed for $10,000 a month. I mean, that more than covers our living expenses. So we're still able to save a few thousand dollars and just have that buffer room, so we feel very comfortable.
Yeah, I really like you sharing that epiphany, because there's a lot of chatter out there about the FIRE movement, what it means, what it doesn't mean. And I think, you know, just simply thinking about it in those terms is a great way to put it in perspective to people. I did have one question about real estate, since that actually is, you know, one of your sort of two core passive incomes. So what do you do with real estate? I'm trying to think of like the right way to phrase this question, but obviously there are real estate bubbles. Things happen. You know, maybe there are maintenance issues with like a particular property. Like, walk me through like some of the risks that go on investing in real estate, and maybe like how you've managed to overcome those, or like think those through or plan for those.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of risks. There's risks with anything that you do with your money, but you can really reduce or eliminate those if you're smart about it. So one of the big risks that I see, or even mistakes that people make, is thinking that, okay, if I rent out the house for X amount, we'll just say $1,000, and my mortgage payment is $800, then I'll be profiting $200 per month, right? But no, that is not right. Because people forget to take into account all the other expenses that come along with homeownership. So you have to ask yourself, well, who's going to be responsible for the utilities, the tenant or the owner? Who's going to do pest control? Who's going to do lawn care, lawn maintenance? And then, you know, if you're in a homeowners association, then you have that HOA fee. And then there's things like vacancy. Maybe it's not going to be rented 100% of the days, because there might be a week or two between tenants when you're turning over the unit. Then you have maintenance and repair. And then you have this whole other bucket of capital expenditures, which are really the big ticket items that eventually you will have to repair over time. So things like a roof, the HVAC, the flooring, you know, things that they're not going to last for 20 entire years, maybe. So you have to also factor that in. So I think that the risk becomes, for people, will I actually profit from this rental? And that risk can be completely eliminated by just planning for all these different things and factoring it in from the get-go, and really ensuring that you're accounting for everything, and even adding like an additional 20% buffer is what I'd recommend.
Yeah, what's the buffer margin there?
Yeah, I always do 20%. Here's what you want to do. When I run my numbers before I put an offer in on a property, I want to be so conservative with my numbers. And maybe I think, okay, I'm going to make $250 in profit from this property. That's what my estimates are. I want to be so conservative that when it actually comes down to it and I buy the property and I'm renting it out, I'm actually beating my numbers and I'm making more than I thought. That's the right way to do it. And that's going to ensure that you're really accounting for all those different risks that are associated in terms of financial.
That's such great advice.
Yeah, thanks. And I would say another big risk that landlords would probably agree is a risk is just your tenants. Because anytime you're dealing with other humans in your business, that's a liability. You know, that's a liability because they're not going to take care of the property the way that you would. If it's a multi-unit property, you know, what if they're causing issues for the other tenants? What if something happens on your property that they caused, but you're the owner and you're responsible? You know, so there's big risks there. And the question I get a lot is, well, how do I find a good tenant? Because I think for landlords, tenants can be one of the hardest things to deal with for a property. I know for us, that's made it very difficult at times. And you certainly don't want to invest in real estate to become a full-time landlord and to have to deal with all those issues. So not only do you want good tenants, but you want to have a property manager in place, and you want to account for that in your financials as well. And that can be difficult because finding a good property management company that's trustworthy can be hard. So that's another risk. It's just all about, in my opinion, to eliminate or reduce the risk. It's all about having the right expectations going in and really accounting for the risks from the get-go, because that's the only way to manage them.
Did you, like, from your first property, did you account for these risks, or did you have any moments where, like, oh man, I totally forgot to think about that or this, or, you know, it had some of those sort of like whammy in the face moments?
Oh my gosh, I am still learning. You know, I'm still making mistakes. So here's a funny story, which wasn't funny at the time, but it is now. You know, there was one time that we bought this property that was vacant, and we were going to be doing some work on it to get it ready for people to live in. And we had bought this security system. And on the day of closing, you know, I took the security system over to the property, but my husband was out of town at the time. So I figured we could wait a few days to install the security system. In the meantime, I had like appliances delivered to the property as well, like brand new appliances. So yeah, that first night, the property was broken into and robbed. Now, luckily, and thank goodness for this, these people that robbed us were not professionals. They didn't have a way to carry out appliances and to haul those off. So they took anything that they could carry, which was like the security system that was boxed up.
Of course.
They stole my security system. Yeah, it's the most ironic thing. And they stole like some tools and equipment and the microwaves or whatever. But I think it was like $1,000 total in damage, but it really could have been a lot worse. And luckily for us, you know, we had built that buffer into our numbers. We were able to pay for it and get by fine. And we learned a big lesson, which is when you buy a vacant property, make sure you protect your physical property and get that security system up right away.
Yeah, for sure. Right. You're going to never make that mistake again.
Exactly. Yeah. It costed me $1,000 to learn that. So that was an important education lesson for me.
But I love that you share that, because I feel like too often we talk about the successes that people have and we don't share like the moments of fear or the when things don't go right, or that it doesn't have to all be perfect, or you don't have to have everything figured out in the beginning. I think those are really important stories to share, because I know, at least for me, that then like further motivates me of like, I could do this. Like, this is possible for me. Like, it moves me from that place of like, there's no way I could get there to, yeah, I could do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just have to know you're going to make mistakes as you go. And that's all a part of the learning process. And, you know, I'm two and a half, 3 years into this, and I'm still learning. I'm still thinking, oh, man, yeah, that's something I probably should have included in my lease. And then I'll make a note and make sure I revise my lease for the next tenant. But, you know, so it's you're always learning in the business.
So your new book, Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement, have you always, when I was reading the book, I was like thinking about this, like, have you always been interested in this idea of passive income, or where did this like really like bubble up, rise up in you that you were like, okay, this is how I want to live my life?
Yeah, you know, I was always one of those people that I just had this gut feeling that I don't think I ever would have been fully satisfied working for somebody else. I truly wanted to either find a way to achieve financial independence or be my own business owner where I could control my time and where I worked and if and when I wanted to work. You know, time is your most valuable resource. Anyone can go out and make another dollar, but none of us can create another minute. So time is your most valuable resource, and being able to be in full control of your time is one of the most powerful things. So I'm incredibly grateful for where I am now. I mean, I'm astonished that we were able to do this so quickly. And it's something that I always wanted to work towards, but I don't think I ever heard of the concept of passive income until after we even invested in our first rental property.
Wow.
And then I started hearing about passive income. You know, so real estate investing was really my initial way of trying to achieve early retirement and financial independence. And once I started learning about passive income, I just realized that there were so many ways to generate passive income. And so I started thinking of all the different ways that I could do this. And that's where a lot of the material from my book came, is just from my own hours and hours and hours of research. And another cool thing that I started to do was talk to experts that had already achieved early retirement and passive income. And I started to pick their brain. So like in the book, I interviewed Hal Elrod, who is the international best-selling author of The Miracle Morning. And I interviewed Bobby Hoyt, who has created this extremely successful blog and has online courses and makes over like 50 or 100 grand per month or something insane. He's the founder of
yes.
The Millennial Money Man. Yeah. So very cool. And I got to interview David Osborne, who is one of the most successful real estate franchise owners in the world. So it was through a lot of these conversations with people that I got really excited. And I realized, man, this is actually a lot easier to retire this way. Like, this is something anybody can do, even if they're starting from nothing. I mean, that's where I started. Even if they don't have a ton of money, they can do passive income. So once I started learning more about this, I just got so excited. And I realized this is what I wanted to focus on. And, you know, I thought it was going to take us years and years, but once we got going, that momentum just builds quickly. And it's really surprising how much you can accomplish in just a few short years.
All of this like gets me just so excited, because I know for so many people, this is like a passion, but it's always the how. How do I do this? How do I start? So I loved reading your book, because you really like walked through these different examples in a way that I think anybody could see themselves as this being like a possibility for them. And you have so much personal finance advice. I would love to just kind of like sum up, like, if you could distill everything that you've learned this far down to like maybe your top, you know, one or two best money tips that you think everyone should know and master, what would those be?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I get so fired up about the topic of personal finance. So I could just give so many tips. But, you know, one thing that is so important, just in general, like a general, extremely important financial tip, is to start investing at a young age. No matter if you're investing in the stock market or investing in real estate or whatever it may be, start as soon as you can, because time is your biggest advantage. Even if you don't pick the best investments or have a ton of money, you will still be better off than an expert investor who waits 10 years from now to start investing. You know, so the saying goes, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the second best time is today. So don't wait to start investing. It's one of the most important things you can do to set yourself up for your financial future. Another really important concept in terms of money management is just the idea that delayed gratification is so important. So having the discipline to say no to something today that maybe you want to buy, but you don't need to buy, will give you so much more freedom in the future to say yes to all the different things that you want to buy. And really what I've learned and what I believe is that delayed gratification is the single biggest factor in your financial success. So I think it's so important to have that self-discipline and to really think about your future self and what are the things you can do today to take care of your future self.
I know, especially now, Rachel's story really inspires me. There are so many different ways to build a passive income strategy. And I know I'm going to be borrowing, of course, a few of her tips. You can find Rachel on her site at mymoneyhoneyrachel.com and pick up her two books, Money Honey and Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement, both on Amazon. I'll have links to all of that in the show notes. She also loves to post funny memes on social media. We could all use a few of those right now. So check her out on Money Honey Rachel on Instagram. And I want to leave you with something a little bit different today, with a message from The Kind Message. It says, "History will remember when the world stopped and the flight stayed on the ground and the cars parked in the street and the trains didn't run. History will remember when the schools closed and the children stayed indoors and the medical staff walked towards the fire and they didn't run. History will remember when the people sang on their balconies in isolation, but so very much together in courage and song. History will remember when the people fought for their old and their weak, protected the vulnerable by doing nothing at all. History will remember when the virus left and the houses open and the people came out and they hugged and kissed and started again, kinder than before."
Hey, you.
Yes, you.
Before you go, we want to say thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the links, tags, and ads you've heard on today's episode, check out the show notes or go to mmoneypodcast.com. where you'll find more episodes to share with your friends. While you're at it, leave us a review and make sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss out on all the money tips and tricks that will take you from a millennial regular to a millennial money expert. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.
Cool.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.